And welcome to AFL Tonight. This is ArenaFan.com's weekly look at everything arena football. I'm your host, Tim Capper, along with my... I'm trying to come up with something for you this week. I don't know. We are coming to you live from New Orleans, Louisiana, home of Avite Arena Bowl 25. Adam. All right.
Now we're separated by about, I don't know, 3.5 feet as opposed to, what, 600, 700, more than that.
Yeah, something like that.
700 miles, how many ever miles it is.
Yeah, I know. So we're here at the Arena Bowl. First time it's back in New Orleans since Arena Bowl 22. It is a well, I guess we could say, just be honest, it's a lot different than what it was.
Well, it is a whole hell of a lot different
than what it was.
What it was. Even just a matter of looking at the signs on the streets. Well, there are no signs on the streets. The signs in the hotel, well, there's very few of those to blow up. You know, the blow up big what were those things called?
The inflatable things. They had the statues with the two teams on them.
All of that's gone, and the Sheraton being a tremendous hotel is also gone. Well, it's not their fault, but it's under massive construction right now on the hotel, for lack of better terms, in really crappy shape.
Yeah, I agree. And the weather's been totally different too. I mean, it's been raining.
It was teeming about a couple hours ago, and now you look outside, it just kind of looks like. As opposed to anything else.
Yeah, who would have thought New Orleans and the streets are flooding?
I know, who would have known?
Well, you know, we got the two teams now. After a half-decent two games combined, we had a really crappy game when it came to the Jacksonville-Philadelphia game, but a very good game when it came to the Utah, my choice originally, the Utah Blaze game and the Arizona Rattlers.
Yeah, it was definitely a case of two totally different games. Jacksonville, we kind of knew, really didn't have much of a shot of taking down Philadelphia, and it showed. I think that game, it was 6-0, and then all of a sudden it was 34-35-6, whatever it was. And it never just got any closer after that. So that was the first problem in that game. Fortunately, on Saturday night, we had a game that really had a little bit of everything. Had a lot of defense in the game, too.
Yep.
Some defensive stops, a lot of, big momentum-type, fourth down plays, fourth down scores, a lot of big third down conversions, and all the sorts. And obviously, in the end, Arizona fights back from down 9 on a couple different instances in the second half to make it here to New Orleans.
It's very good to see that we had a good game for the second game of the conference championship. So it's just a matter of these two teams now. You guys are able to experience the media day since we've been here. The fans have started to finally trickle into the New Orleans area. So we've seen quite a few and. A few of the mainstays, I think, on the in the Arena Fan chat room and whatnot. So it's at least we're starting to see. It's starting to get there, but it's just a matter of.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, I mean, it's not going to take a rocket science to figure out tomorrow. We're going to see 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 fans, maybe.
Yeah.
At this game, not the 16,000 or 17,000, whatever it was. Both in 2007 and 2008. So it's going to be in numbers. I mean, the fans flocked at that point. It was a ticket you actually had to work to get at times, whereas this is going to be, you can walk right up to the game, 5 minutes beforehand and probably be able to get a seat probably in the fifth row still.
If not, yeah. And, it really makes me wonder, though, Adam, if, depending on what their early numbers are, do you think the league would be willing to black off the top portion of the New Orleans Arena?
I absolutely think that's going to happen. And not necessarily in the entire upper deck, but I definitely think at least the corners will absolutely just have tarps over them.
Yeah, because it's just something that it's frustrating for an arena bowl. You want it to be, chock full. I mean, yes, it was chock full last year, but certain circumstances and a can of corn were the differences last year. So
who knows what type of promotion they're going to come up with tomorrow that we may see in a actually not in a newspaper because there's no newspaper here either anymore.
No,
so who knows? Who knows what you're going to find around here?
I haven't seen a local Groupon thing or anything like that. So it's I don't know.
We're hoping for better, but we're planning for what we think to be not necessarily planning for the worst, but planning to at least be relatively realistic.
Now, if we were looking at so far the festivities that the league has offered. Very little as of so far, but there's the gala that's scheduled for tonight. Most of the awards are known. You can head over to the Arena Fan at arenafan.com and or our awards page and be able to see everything that's been given out so far.
And we're going to try to see if we can get some. I don't know whether we're going to be able to get cameras in tonight. It's only about an hour and 20 minutes or so before the gala. But if we can and we can get in and we can get in cameras, we'll be taking pictures and updating from right there in the room, in ballroom, whichever ballroom it's going to be here in the Sheraton.
Exactly. So if you happen to be listening to this, make sure you check our Twitter feed, Facebook, check the message boards. We're going to try to keep everything up to date with as much information as possible. So, we get to find out who wins number one and number two on the top 25 players of all time. I think we know what's coming down to anyways. Now, one of the other things that we were hoping to hear about, it's been talked about for a little while, we've mentioned in the past couple of weeks, Adam, is the collective bargaining agreement, but we don't, you know.
No, unfortunately, Commissioner Kerr's State of the League address on Wednesday morning, we didn't hear anything about that. Commissioner Kerr spoke about the idea of a developmental league, spoke about the idea of an international league, alluded to the labor disputes without mentioning anything about the actual labor disputes, but anyone there who had any clue what was going on in the league knew what he was referencing. We also found out that owners' meetings went on yesterday.
Yep.
So there at least should have been a good turnout of owners.
We do know that at least Brady Nelson was here. That we do know.
Yes, we also know that we've seen Jeff Bushey. We've seen Brett Bushey. We've seen Brady Nelson. We've seen Benson. We've seen... Arizona's ownership.
You mean Newman.
Not Benson, Newman. Yes. same city, wrong guy.
Yeah.
So we have seen our owners, you know, some of the owners here. Who knows what's going to come out of that. We're still hoping that we're going to hear something at some point about the agreement with the AFLPU and the league. But at this point, it still seems to be hush-hush, even though our sources are still telling us that this is done and has been done for weeks.
Yeah, and I just think you would want to be able to just, it's the stage, you want to give as much positive information as possible, but, you know, all the things that we can do right now is continue our KERS count, right? So.
It's great.
So, anybody that doesn't know what we're talking about, it seems that Commissioner Jerry KERS, you know, and this is all in fun, has a tendency of saying, great, positive. What are the other words that we're missing here?
Remarkable, fabulous.
Yeah. Now, I mean, and those who've been around in the AFL know that Commissioner Baker did the exact same thing, a very similar thing to it, you know, helmet popping, heart stopping, in-your-face football, or whatever it was that he kept on using, you know, time and time again. It's just, do we dare say it's turned into like another Bon Jovi drinking game?
What, because the first song that I heard on Tuesday morning on my radio, what was Living on a Prayer?
Yeah, exactly.
And I said, wow, it's going to be a long...
but, yeah, it's, you know, merchandising set up and whatnot. But, yeah, I just hope that... let's just hope that it's just a good game in itself. So
definitely got a good one last year. So hopefully we end up with one that's, that comparable this year. It's hard to say just as good because that was one of the best games I've ever seen. But hopefully we see something that's at least somewhat comparable.
Yeah, and I think we will be posting our picks tomorrow, I think.
That's late tonight or tomorrow, depending upon how many people get back to me.
Yeah.
Arena Fan Writers, if you're listening to this, I've emailed you. You should be emailing me back.
So, okay, you know what? Not much information coming out of the city, out of the league, you know, besides the stuff that we already know about and the awards and stuff not. If we were to look at, you know, something we can talk about, by the way, because I know some people are talking about who should be the top guy for this year. You know, the league announced who the top head coach was just recently yesterday. It was Utah head coach Ron James. Best guy to go ahead and give it to, you think, as far as?
I don't know. I it's hard to argue with Doug Blank. You know, he had the best, you know, statistically the best team in the league, won 15 games. I mean, I don't have a problem with it. I could have seen giving it to P.O. I could have seen giving it to, I could have really seen giving it to a lot of different people. But I don't know if there was a coach out there that you could say really truly deserved the award. I think Coach Plank did what he was supposed to do with a good team. And it really seemed like everybody else was pretty good. I mean, giving it to P.O., Pat O'Hara, would be one thing, but we got to remember his team did go 8-10.
That's
so
true.
So it's not like, you know, it's not like they had a remarkable season.
Yeah, and what about Matt Salk getting the assistant coach of the year?
I think the wrong Utah assistant got that. I think Rob Keefe, even though he was fired as a coordinator earlier this year in Orlando for his job on the offense, and deservedly so, clearly it was more in his element with Utah taking a defense that historically has just been atrocious and made it something that was actually a bit of a force at the end of the year.
Any other surprises so far that we've seen come out of the awards? I mean, in your opinion,
I think there's a lot of talking about why Philadelphia only had four players on the All Arena team, and Arizona had five players on the All Arena team between the first team and the second team. I think you could definitely make an argument, and that'll be another discussion for another day about the top 25 players. That maybe some of the names on there don't correspond with the other list that the league came out with.
No.
But that's, again, another discussion for another day that we'll get Andy in on. Kent Richardson won DB of the year. I don't think he's DB of his own team, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, 14 picks is nice, but he's not the most talented DB in that secondary. I think Rayshon Kaiser is. I could have seen giving it to Arkeith Brown, who I thought had an absolutely remarkable year.
Yeah.
He may not be the heart and soul that secondary Virgil Gray is, but Brown definitely seems to make the big plays when need be, and I think he should have been he should have at least been considered for that honor, in my opinion.
Now, something that came out was just the other day, and it happened. I think Commissioner Kurz mentioned it in his letter to the fans that came out. I think it was released today. Richard Obert was actually mentioned in a short blog about how the Arena League needs to expand its TV horizons. There were great games. It basically starts off saying it's the Arena Football is a great product. Saturday's National Conference Championship game at U.S. Airways Center, where the Rattlers won, was as great as an environment as I've been around. You know, even though 9,700 fans. It's just a matter of how they can expect the league to flourish when it comes to TV. Now, I think the commissioner mentioned something, possibly having a how did he put it?
There's some sort of he's alluding to the fact that the league is looking for its sponsors, specifically on television to be able to cover a game another weeknight of the week.
I don't
know. I'm assuming that would mean somebody looking for a Thursday night game or maybe a Monday night game. I can't imagine that anybody's willing to give up weekend good time for that. So we'll have to see what's coming up the road. I just don't know how many networks are really out there that are the big time, networks. I mean, short of maybe like I think we've talked about this before, True TV, an NBC Sports Network, a CBS Sports Network, something. I mean, it won't be either of those, but the networks like that. That could pick this league up. I just don't know what motivation is there to actually do that.
What happens to the credibility, though? I mean, Richard Obert actually mentions that specifically, is that because of what's happening on the NFL Network, it is very possible that, we know the game is supposed to kick off at 9:30 Central Time, 10:30 Eastern. It's very possible if this game goes any longer, the Jets preseason game goes any longer, we could easily get pushed back.
No, who knows what's... I don't know if there's been a contingency put in plan for that. You hope for the best that the game actually does kick off right there at 9:30. But, yes, it definitely damages the credibility of the game, and it's really going to challenge the credibility of the game if you look and you see 5,000 fans in the seats.
That's another thing, too. The start date, too. Start time really doesn't help either.
And the other thing that the NFL Network really needs, and first of all, I don't know why the NFL Network would re-up a contract with the AFL. I have no idea why they would do it between... the labor stoppage, with Cleveland that caused the game to go off the air with that Pittsburgh-Orlando debacle in week one. And to be honest with you, most of the games have sucked. They didn't put on Western Division games this year, and Commissioner Kurz made mention of that at Media Day. This is actually the first time the Rattlers have been on the NFL Network this year. It's interesting, and his argument is they don't want to play their games at 5 o'clock local time. Well, if they don't want to play the game at 5 o'clock local time, you need to find a contract that's going to let... going to let all of the teams be on TV.
Yeah.
So it makes it really, really difficult when you can't, it happens to be some of the best teams are in the West, and if you can't put those teams on TV, what good are you doing? And you end up seeing things like you saw last week in the for lack of a better term, the Western Division game was a whole hell of a lot better than the Eastern Division game.
Which it was.
You've got Jacksonville who just lays an egg and gets beat by the most points that any team's been beaten by in the playoffs in AFL history.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get one of the better games that we've seen in recent years in playoff history. But because of the fact of just sheer, you know, not demographics, location and time zone, that's why the NFL Network clearly, if both of those games are played in the central time zone, they're going to put on the Arizona-Utah game.
Exactly. No, I know. It's just,
The frickin' Predators were on the NFL Network, I think, 8 times this year.
I know. Well, television, I think, needs to be modified in some way. But, you know, I know we talked about it last week, too. But I think it's just a matter of something that the league needs to do in order to improve its standing, not necessarily with its fans, but, I mean, with mainstream media and stuff like that. But it's TV, I think, somehow needs to improve. It's great that we're on a national network. But problem is, as you've alluded to many a time this year, that it's not on in every single market. That's another problem. You know, there's only so many ways that you can try to find the NFL Network on television, you know, whether it be through third party or whatnot. And they don't show them on Ustream, so there's no point.
What, because they showed 8 games, 8 Orlando Predator games, unless you have DirecTV, 0 of them were actually shown in Orlando.
Exactly. So it's either third party or you're out of luck, especially for those games, because, you know, because of the blackout, I guess they could say, that the NFL Network has when it comes to the game. So, I guess we could say it's all about sponsorship and whatnot, I guess, but it's there was a positive this year with some of these teams having local television contracts.
Yeah, I mean, most of them did. Not all of them did, but most of them did. I think all the playoff games were at least televised either on the NFL Network or locally this year, I think, which is something that was not able to be said last year, so I guess one could make the argument that that's a case for improvement.
Well, saving grace this year, I really think, even though the game was on Ustream,
Cox 7.
Was Cox 7.
Of course.
And if I were to give out awards, and I tweeted this, by the way, and they actually gave props back, you know, saying thanks for the applause, is that, you know, if I were to give out a media award this year, well, it would be them. Because their online streaming for Rattlers games are probably one of the best pluses for the league this year.
And their coverage is also, I mean, look, there's no such thing as an announcer for this game that actually sounds like he knows what he's doing. But
right.
the guys in Arizona at least try.
Yeah. And the SWX stuff, I did not know that the SWX stuff is actually broadcast online also for the Shock games, other than watching that horrible staticky stuff that's on Ustream every week. So that's probably just a glitch that needs to be fixed, but who knows. But it's something, you know, they'll address it, I'm sure. We'll have an announcement. Other tell us how we'll have an announcement for something that you know, coming down the pipe later on during the off season. But I think another thing that the league needs to find out, though, Adam, is how many teams are going to be in the Arena League next year.
Because the number could probably be anywhere from about 12 to 20.
Exactly.
I think it's, you know, this is all speculation on our behalf. We don't actually know anything, you know, formally. Maybe we'll hear something tonight, and if we do, it'll be on the front page of Arena Fan by the morning.
Yep.
But it sounds like Kansas City is doing something, whether it be rebranding, whether it be moving, whether it be changing leagues, whether it just be changing ownerships. Kansas City is clearly doing something. Georgia and Pittsburgh are teams that have been at least talked about from what we've been hearing, whether it be dropping into a developmental league, dropping into an IFL,
right.
Doing some other sort of rebranding. And the truth of the matter is you really don't know with the mass majority of these other teams.
No, it's true. And unfortunately, it is a vicious cycle that always seems to occur in the Arena League, I think, is in its inception. I mean, we've never had a year where our team has not moved or folded.
And 2013 won't be that year either.
Yeah, so now, if we were to, I think we mentioned it before, I think we mentioned it earlier this year, any particular market that you think we should go to? Just one off the top of your head, because I know, as I said, we've talked about it before in other ones, but Portland, Seattle.
Portland's going to be the market that gets a team. I would still like to see a team go back to Columbus, but I don't know whether there's anyone that wants to go there.
I don't think we need. Actually, the league also has to settle the issues with happening in Chicago too. They need to find themselves an owner.
Yeah, Chicago definitely needs an owner.
So it's. I mean, it's okay being a tie to the league, but, and this, they never. You know, the league has never made any real issues about owning a team. they've always said that, you know.
No, but it's clear, and you know, people have gone on the record saying that it's clear that this version of the Chicago Rush and its ownership, which obviously is a league, is more concerned about the bottom line than anything else.
Yeah.
We've heard that they've cut costs on a lot of stuff. So hopefully someone or some group comes in, wants to pick this up and start. Start hopefully getting this franchise back in the right direction again from a monetary standpoint and a fan attendance standpoint.
Exactly. I know we mentioned before, but it seems like we talk about it all the time. Attendance, something has to be done. I know Commissioner Kerr said in his letter that did he use significant increase?
He said many teams had increased attendance.
Yeah, many teams, exactly.
And if many is six, that means that many more 10 are down, or well, 10, not including San Antonio, are down. Some of which are down by a massive amount. And we've obviously seen both in the regular season and in the playoffs that that attendance has just been really shoddy, and really shoddier than it's been since 1989.
Yeah, they come with their own reason. It's the folding of the league or whatever you want to call it.
I still look back at the Solon week one, who drew 16,000 fans almost in week one. They could barely do that for their two games combined in the playoffs.
Yes.
There's something wrong with that.
Yeah, and yeah, their hope to draw all these fans for this 30 tickets for $150 really did not seem to go over well. I mean, we know what they announced, but I don't really think it really made that much of a difference when it came to.
Yeah, you don't believe 12,332 fans either.
I think you could tell, unless a lot of them were dressed as seats. So, I don't know. Wow, let's see. There's so much here at Arena Bowl week, but yet there's not.
Well, there is a game.
There is a game, yes, and we obviously want to leave that. To the very end here. So, what else could see? We could talk about it anyways. Top 25 players, we know there are two people left, Barry Wagner and Eddie Brown. On the 20th anniversary list, it was Eddie Brown 1, Barry Wagner 2. We do know Wags is here in New Orleans.
We have seen Barry Wagner. We have seen we've seen Coach Ho.
Yep.
We've seen who else have we seen?
Shedrick Bonner.
That's right. Well, Bonner's on the broadcast.
Yep.
So we've seen him, and supposedly he's a really good golfer because he won the golf event today.
Yep. But if we were to choose, I know Joe, our illustrious leader, has not had a say. But if we were to have a say, would we make the correction?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Put Wags first, Eddie Brown too.
There never has been and never will be another Barry Wagner in this
That's
league.
That's true. Obviously, we feel that the only person who really got the shaft this year in the 25 year was James Barron, unfortunately because of his involvement with the AFLPU.
Allegedly,
yes.
With air quotes.
Considering he goes from, was it top 10?
He was in the top 10. I think he was sixth.
And he's now not even there.
But John Corker is, don't worry.
Yes, still there. I'm trying to think. One thing you did notice, and you mentioned and a lot of people may not know about this, if you haven't happened to read our yearly AFL blog at the Arena Bowl, there seems to be sort of a chip on the shoulder, I guess we could say, of the Arizona Rattlers when it comes to the game this week.
Yeah, Media Day was a very different experience this year than really any other. I mean, it basically had the same setup as last year, the difference is Commissioner Kerr started. Last year it was kind of a free-for-all. Commissioner Kerr spoke, then both coaches spoke, and the teams were all just in the room together for a couple hours.
Right.
This time around it was one team and then Commissioner Kerr's and then the other team. And Arizona started off, and Arizona really felt like it wasn't all about, we think we're being disrespected, but there was a lot of that. There was Coach Guy mentioned it. I spoke with Virgil Gray, who mentioned it. I spoke with Maurice Purify, who had something to say about it. I spoke with Nick DeVila, who had something to say about it. And I'm sure if I interviewed every single player on the team, they would all say something about being disrespected. So it feels like this chip on Arizona's shoulder is a lot more than the fact that it was beaten last year right at the very end by the Sharks, really, in the snake pit.
Well, I also think, too, that when you have a team that comes out this year, maybe Philadelphia Soul, who comes out with their slogan as, "We got this," They are one game away from being the Arena Bowl champion for their second time in three Arena Bowls. Four Arena Bowls.
Dynasty asterisk.
It kind of makes you think that, you know, they really are high in themselves.
And they are. And they've got, they're a team that has swagger, and you could tell it just by talking to them. I guess there's a fine line between arrogance and swagger.
Right.
And there's also a fine line between being loose and being, I guess, kind of foolish is the word I want to use for it.
Well, foolish how?
Just kind of not taking it serious, not almost like there's a bit of that sense, and again, nobody said it. It's just a matter of that sense and the feeling that, you know, we're here, we should come, we should win this game.
Right.
When I spoke with Derek Ross on media day, he said the only way that Philly's offense is getting stopped is if it stops itself. That type of arrogance, it's good, but it's bad, because this is a different challenge than Philadelphia's faced all year long. And the way the Rattlers have got to be looking at this is, hey, you know what? You may have just beaten the crap out of Jacksonville
right.
by 55. You may have kicked the crap out of all these other teams. You haven't played us yet.
So it's based on, you're saying more or less, not really arrogance, more cockiness, could we say? I mean, it's
a fine line between those two things, but it's definitely, Philadelphia feels like this is just how it's supposed to be, and it's supposed
right.
to win this title, and Arizona feels like it needs to come out and prove that you know, it feels like it's them against, they feel like it's them against the world.
Right, okay. If you weren't able to watch the stream by the league for the media day press conference, we do have the audio available, as we normally do for all of our Arena Bowl.
And we may get the video up one of these days.
Yep, all of our exclusive interviews, one-on-ones, but we do have the press conference with Commissioner Kurz, his State of the League address. We do have the head coaches, Coach Guy and Coach Plank, in their speeches, I guess we could say. But those are available on podcast, and you can download them immediately. So, Adam, look like the sun almost came out.
I just snapped a picture not too long ago of our quote studios. I'll be putting that up on Facebook here.
I was wondering if you'd done. Okay.
Yeah, that's what I was doing with the phone.
Oh, okay. So. Yeah, me sitting on the floor, Adam sitting in his
in a chair.
In his chair.
We kind of have this tiny little table propped up with two computers and some microphones and a soundboard, and it's a god awful freaking setup. But when you're on the road, you know, desperate times. When you don't have Radio Row to do this at, this becomes Radio Row.
Yeah, let me ask you about that. Since many of the fans may not know what happened last time we were in New Orleans, you know, there was a Radio Row. There was more of a presence, with media. Is it something that the Arena Bowl has lost?
Who's coming? I mean, how many radio stations are out there anymore that are really covering this league and really care to do anything more than basically just pay some guy? I mean, Milwaukee just had one guy. Most of the teams that came to, I don't know about Orlando because I don't know where they were sitting, but I could tell you for Tampa Bay, they didn't have anybody at most of those games. They didn't have anybody calling radio, or was just the PR director, or whatever. So they don't care. They're not coming to these things.
And we actually found out, too, that the Arizona beat writer is not going to be showing up either.
Yep, the Arizona beat writer, Richard Obert, one of my favorite guys who covers this league, is still back in Phoenix.
Yeah, so we were going to say it anyways. Our illustrious leader just walked in that room. Just say hello, Joe!
Hello, Joe.
God, I knew that was coming.
Yeah, that was very, very predictable.
Is it something that, you know, it's true, though, Adam? I mean, with the, you know, Orlando was online radio. It wasn't really a point of having Radio Row, so it's...
And it's also a matter of who's going to be walking through Radio Row to get interviews. There were names, you know, having nothing to do with the game. I mean, there you would get, I remember in 08 we had Colston Weatherington, we had Pat O'Hara, who had just been named the head coach of the LA Avengers. Even happened. We had Coach Markham come through. We had executives come through. In 07, we had Mike and Mike come through. We had Jaworski.
Yeah.
We had Bon Jovi.
We had Sirius Satellite back then too.
Right. We had the Sirius guys were back there. So that we had a lot more to pull from, and we just don't have that to be able to pull from at this point.
I think this will probably be one of the weirdest neutral site Arena Bowls since they been launched. I guess we could.
Well, it's certainly the smallest. It's not a spectacle. It's not a spectacle in the city. It's not a spectacle really. It doesn't seem to be a spectacle for the league either. It's just
it's
a game with a couple extra press conferences and an award show.
Yeah, and it's true. I mean, I came in last night and the driver knew about the Voodoo. He hadn't been to a Voodoo game yet, but he's heard good things about the Voodoo. The other guy next to me, I don't think, knew anything about football, to be all honest with you, because nobody knew the game was going on.
Well, we've only been asked. I've been asked.
No surprise, though.
I've only talked to two people that, you know, two of the natives, and they both said, why in the hell is this game being played so late? We really don't have a good explanation for it for them.
Yeah, I really wasn't able to explain that either when I was mentioning it last night, just because
Tim Tebow is more important than the almighty Arena Football League.
I guess so. That has to be what it is, right? So, Adam, the reason why we're actually here in New Orleans is actually for the game itself, for Vitae Arena Bowl 25 here in New Orleans on the NFL Network. Philadelphia being the home team. Arizona being the away team, as shown by their white helmets that they're
hideous all whites that they're wearing.
That they're going to be wearing, are going to be matching up at 10:30 on Friday, 9:30 Eastern, et cetera, et cetera. You can do the math.
9:30 Central.
Exactly. So I didn't think that these teams had actually ever met, but they actually did meet once.
Last year.
Yeah, last year, and look, a hell of a barn burner, 55-54 for Arizona at Philadelphia.
Obviously a very, very different Philadelphia.
Quite, exactly. Actually, let's look at that. Although that team itself, how many players? Yeah, let's put it this way. Yeah, Keith Stokes was still on the team for Philadelphia.
Vaino was
a player. Yeah, Cervell Newton.
Was Vaino the quarterback at that point?
Vaino was the quarterback.
Coach Ho was the coach.
Yeah. A lot has changed. Not as much has changed for Arizona. I mean, DeVito was still the QB. Rod Windsor's not here anymore.
No, but Maurice Purify is.
Yep. That's,
Kerry Reed is still here. Tyree Glasper, mm-hmm. Antoine Hawthorne, mm-hmm. Virgil Gray. There's a lot of guys that are still back.
Yep. Philadelphia has a running game now. You know, with Derek Rossi wasn't with the team last year, so it's going to be, I think, it's going to be a very interesting game. I mean, if we were to put these, you know, two teams together, I mean, the Philadelphia...
You may have an old AFL team if you put these two teams together.
That's true. I mean, Philadelphia basically has not really had didn't have a game that really mattered for the last month up into the playoffs. I mean, even though they basically seem to have, walk through the playoffs.
Well, New Orleans
played them a lot better.
New Orleans gave them a damn good fight.
Yeah. Would have been a better game, I think, if Jacksonville had not been in the game.
Would have been a better fight if the refs, you know, didn't screw over the Voodoo, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Arizona comes in. I mean, it's, they didn't have to go through San Antonio because Utah was able to do it and knock them off. But this is an Arizona team, as you mentioned before, that, really has something to play for. I think the question is, I mean, sure, they're here, and we've heard this many a time, they're here to win the championship. If we were to put these two teams together, overall, first and foremost, which team do you think has the edge over the other? I mean, you really can't go by record. I mean, yes, they've played the game. Philadelphia won as many games as they did, but it's, I think Arizona's had the harder route this year.
Well, the given is what's seemingly the given is that is that Philadelphia has the better team, and it's hard to argue by today's standards that this isn't a really, really good team.
Right.
This is a team that can run the ball. This is a team that could throw the ball. This is a team that I don't want to say has a fantastic defense, but it has an opportunistic defense. It's got a very good front four. It's not dominating. They didn't have the numbers this year that pop off the page. Brian Robinson had 7 block kicks, had 10 sacks. Has had three sacks here in the postseason already as well. So it's a team that does a lot of things right and sound. And, Dan Radebaugh, I think the argument could be made that he has evolved into a top echelon quarterback. I still don't see it. I think he's probably right around the midway point of the league.
Yeah.
And if you look at Arizona, Coach Guy made a big deal out of the fact that the team had 50% turnover from last year at Media Day, but the 50% that turned over, short of really Rob Windsor, was not the dominating 50% part of this. So the mainstays of the team are back, and the few little pieces, you know, not little pieces, but the few pieces that they brought in this year really make this team really, really good. And we have to remember that last year, Arizona blew through everybody
right.
to get to the Arena Bowl.
No, yeah, it's but you know, when it comes to Arizona, though, how about on defense? I mean, there's a possibility of having a huge issue when it comes to Virgil Dre. I mean, he did go down last week. It didn't look like he was going to come back, but yet we hear that he's going to be playing. Supposedly playing.
Well, we spoke to Virgil Gray on Wednesday morning at Media Day. Said he's worked a lot with the trainers. Still doesn't know whether he's going to be able to go. I know he's insistent that he's going to be able to give it a go and push guns to shove, but he doesn't know yet, and the team haven't made a call on that.
Right.
If not, what's going to have to happen is Arkeith Brown is going to have to go from a corner position into a safety type of position. I use the term safety loosely because safety doesn't always mean you're actually kind of just hanging back there, but when it's not straight man, Arkeith Brown will be, you know, the last line of defense instead of Virgil Gray, and that's going to kick somebody else in the lineup, and that could be problematic because, you know, Gray has been the centerpiece of this secondary now for 2 years,
yep.
And it's clear that if he's not out there, and we saw
and returns
it,
too, right?
Yeah, and returns, yeah, but it's very clear when he left, you know, when he left against Utah, the defense was playing well, and after he left, the defense couldn't stop a thing the
exactly,
entire game.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I granted, it was Utah. Utah, Tommy Grady throws for, 158 touchdowns, I think he ended up with on the year, so something like some astronomical number, if you know, if you include the playoffs, 142 in the regular season. But this is definitely going to be a challenge for Arizona's defense, for sure.
Now, if we look at the quarterbacks, match them up together, Dan Radabaugh and Nick DeVia, you know, DeVia's done this already. He's been to an Arena Bowl. He sort of has a reason to come back and try to win this game.
And he stood toe-to-toe with Aaron Garcia.
Exactly, exactly. It came down to what, 3 seconds. 3 seconds of glory, I think it's that's what the Jacksonville called there. Or was it 7 seconds? I can't remember how many seconds.
Whatever it was.
Whatever it was, yeah, exactly. If we were to match these two together, who do you think has the, you know, has the edge?
Well, it's different because it's you know, what each offensive coordinator / head coach asked their quarterback to do. Davila's asked to stand back there in the pocket and throw deep balls to Purify and Reed and all those, and to, you know, Harvey and all those guys. Well, Harvey won't be playing in this game, but
right.
all those, you know, all those receivers. He's really asked to lead the team and lead the offense and be the guy who puts the ball in his hands and makes the plays to win the game. Radabaugh is kind of given a very different role. He takes a lot of one-step drops and gets the ball, three-step drops and gets the ball out on very short routes. He turns around and hands the ball off to Derrick Ross quite
exactly,
a bit.
Exactly, yeah.
So they're asked to do, and that's not a knock on Radabaugh.
No, that's just that's a part of the game right
so,
there.
I think if you want the game on, you know, if the game is on the line, which quarterback you want, you certainly want Nick DeVila. Of these two, because we haven't seen Dan Radabaugh do it. We just haven't seen him do it. He's never been in that position, even against New Orleans when the game came down to the wire, in the first round of the playoffs. Yeah, they scored, but even if they didn't score, it didn't mean the defense couldn't still win the game. So it wasn't anything that he did. That was a struggle for them to score on that last drive. And he's gonna have to make some plays in this game, and this is where we're gonna find out, whether Dan Radabaugh really is a quarterback that can be a premier signal caller in this league.
Yeah. You look at the wide receivers for all the teams. Obviously, really didn't matter that much. It seemed Philadelphia losing Tiger Jones to the NFL. Just seemed that Donovan Morgan just seemed to be able to, was able to step it back up. First half last week for Arizona, Mars Purify was absolutely nowhere to be seen. But then all of a sudden, it sounded like they looked like they gave him a shot of Evita. I'm sorry, Evita. And, he came out like gangbusters in the second half.
Well, he had all 5 of his touchdowns, all 9 of his catches, all 140 some odd of his yards, right there in the second half of that game. We also have to remember, Arizona only ran 13 plays from scrimmage in the entire first half against Utah, thanks to safeties and onside kicks and you know, a couple picks and those things. I really think this is an advantage to Arizona. Purify is the best receiver that's going to be on the field. Marquise White is 6'7", and the way Richard Overt put it is that he's like having a small forward out there on the field, and he has a nice analysis posted to the Arizona Republic today as to what the Arizona offense has done with Marquise White versus without Marquise White.
Right.
Third receiver is, you know, tends to be a lesser thing for Arizona, kind of like in Utah, how Utah it's Tyson Poots and Aaron Lesway, and that's it. For Philadelphia, Larry Brackens we know has a lot of potential. Donovan Morgan's a beast.
Yes.
It's a good unit. Jeff Hewley is a great third wide receiver. He's a guy that returns kicks. He just won Iron Man of the Year as a slap in the face to Iron Man across the history of this league. But he's a great kick returner. He's a great wide receiver. And he's just a tough guy. He's a tough guy to bring down. He's a good route runner. And now he has championship experience from last year with the Sharks. But I still think in terms of sheer talent and the ability to go out and win a game, I would rather have Purify and Reed than have Brackens and Morgan and Hewley.
Yeah. I think fullback, sweeter, there's no contest when it comes to these two.
It's tough because, I mean, you could say Derek Ross, I don't think it's that Derek Ross is that great. I mean, I think he's a great fullback. Clint Dozell said to me at Media Day on Wednesday that he's totally playing at the wrong level and should be playing in the NFL at this point. And maybe that happens. But, you know, Odie Armstrong has been around this game a long time. He's
right.
Played in arena bowls before. He knows what it takes to win. I mean, he had a 40-yard touchdown.
Let's say a 40-yard touchdown, yeah.
And he's a great blocker. So I hate to say that it's. I mean, yeah, you're going to say the advantage goes to Philadelphia, but Odie Armstrong's not asked to carry the ball 10 times a game. Yep. Derek Ross is. That's the big difference.
Now, kicking. I think we look at both kickers, Chris Gould and
Fabrizio Scott.
Yeah.
Who's going to be kicking in his second game this year. This is a walkover. This is very clear. Chris Gould is one of the best kickers in the league.
Yep.
Probably should have won the Kicker of the Year award. Even though I know Kenny Spencer had a great year. But this is clearly Chris Gould. He forced 57 touchbacks this year, which was the most in the league by a country mile.
Mm-hmm.
Arizona had the best net kick return team, and a lot of it was the actual, you know, the rest of the guys on special teams. But Gould not only kicks off, but he goes down there and makes some SOB tackles sometimes, too. So this is clearly a walkover. Scotch is a great kicker to kick extra points, and for Philadelphia, that's all they need.
Yeah. And lastly, special teams. I think it should be.
Same argument.
Yeah, I could also hint at it could hinder Arizona quite a bit with if Virgil Gray does not play.
Yeah, I don't know. Kerry Reed did a fine job last week returning. And that's probably good enough. Yeah, Jeff Hewley's a better returner, but to blanketly say that gives. Excuse me, if that gives Philadelphia the better special teams, I think would not be fair.
It's more than just stats. It's just more than just stats, obviously.
I think the more interesting thing to look at is the play of the offensive line. Philadelphia has only gotten quarterback sacked 5 times all season long, which is a remarkable stat. But when you really look at it, and you really, you know, if you go back and look at Philadelphia tapes, you see that probably about 85% of their plays, the ball is out of Dan Rodabaugh's hands within 3 steps.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is just a matter of timing and, to his credit, he does a good job of when it's not there getting rid of it and just, you know, living to fight another down. And when you've got, you know, a team like this, when you, especially when you had Tiger Jones, who is, you know, trying to prove that he's an NFL caliber receiver,
right.
You know, it makes things a lot easier to say, okay, we'll waste this down because we still have 3 more to go and get him. But Arizona's offensive line, as Coach Guy was quick to point out at Media Day, is a line that has to protect for 5 steps for the most part, not 1 or 3. And just has done a great job trying to protect Nick Davila. Two made the first team All-Arena, Kyle Young, and Michael Uwe made the first team All-Arena. So it's a testament that shows the people in the know, the people that are voting on these things anyway, recognize how good Arizona's offensive line really is. Not that it's a knock on Philadelphia's, but again, this may be the game where we really see which one of these two units was really deserving of the more spots on that All-Arena team.
Yeah. And I know that we are supposed to be leaving till, you know, we're releasing it later on tomorrow, later on tonight or tomorrow. Overall, if you were to give an edge in the game itself, if you were to pick a winner,
we haven't
Adam.
We haven't talked about defense yet.
Oh, that's right. I did forget about defense. I know we talked about Gurley before, but you know, we'll switch over to defense. Hold on a second. Sorry about that.
Communist.
Yeah, I tell you.
We'll go back to Canada where all they apparently play is offense.
defense. Offense.
Offense spelled with a C.
Yeah, exactly. Defense, if we're to mash the two together. I mean, it's
defense, okay. Defensive line is going to be, in my opinion, advantage to Arizona. Brian Robinson is a tremendous, tremendous athletic guy who can get to the passer. He blocks kicks. He does all of the hard work things to get the job done. So I think that he's probably the best lineman in this game. Antosh Hawthorne is a tremendous nose tackle, and Cliff Dukes, who was the sack leader, I believe, last year for the Storm in the league, has come over. Doesn't quite have as many sacks, but as we saw against Tommy Grady last week, for those of you that watched the game, he gets his hands up. He's just got a knack for knowing when the ball is being released, when to get his hands up. A defensive lineman doesn't have to get to the passer. If he does, great. If he doesn't get there and bats a pass down, though, the truth of the matter is there's not that much difference between an incomplete pass and a 3-yard sack in this league. So I think Arizona has a big advantage up in the defensive line. The back five is going to be very interesting, though. If Virgil Gray doesn't play, I think Arizona has a massive handicap against it, because I think you're going to see whoever is matched up on that third corner being in a lot of trouble going against any of the three receivers for Philadelphia. The Soul, I think, have the most overrated secondary known to man, but it's not to say they're void of talent. Rayshon Kaiser is one of the most talented defensive backs in the league. Kent Richardson just won defensive back of the year, even though I think his teammate should have won it. But had 14 picks this year. I think a lot more of it is the fact that teams threw his way a lot. He had a lot more opportunities to do damage. He's a gambler. He's built a little bit like Kenny McIntyre was back in the day, a guy who doesn't care if he gets burned 10 times. If he gets that pick may be the difference in the game.
Yeah.
So I think the back five is a big advantage to Philadelphia in this game if Virgil Gray doesn't play. If Gray plays and Gray is healthy, and Arizona comes into this game with the rest of that, with the rest of that team intact, I think it's a big advantage to Arizona at that point. But I'm not so sure Virgil Gray is going to be 100%.
And when you say healthy, by the way, Adam, I'm thinking healthy in quotation marks, because I got a feeling that if he is going to play and if he is wearing a brace or whatever it is,
he is in a leg brace.
Yeah, they're going to come after him immediately to try and test him.
Well, it's harder to do. It's easy for him to hide a little bit being that back man. It's going to put a lot of pressure on the linebackers, may force Coach Guy to go more into just a 3-man rush as opposed to a 5-man rush to try to take away some of the quick drops and to let Gray play basically free safety at that point, kind of letting the other four guys play in a short zone. And that may be the key. That might be the key to this game for Arizona.
I think also one thing that I think we'll know how well or how healthy he actually is that, say, for instance, if Arizona does happen to win the toss of the opening half.
You want to play defense.
No. But I'm saying, let's say my theory is that if Arizona it gets the kickoff either way and Gray is not doing returns, I think it will be a little bit of an issue.
Well, I would be surprised to see Virgil Gray returning kicks. If he's not going to be 100%, you want to use him where he's most efficient, and that would be, in that kind of quarterback position of the defense. Yes, the return game is important. Yes, he's a great kick returner, but yes, there are other guys who can do the job and do it adequately for Arizona.
Well, it's true, but he seemed to be doing both quite well. So I think it'll be one thing to look for tomorrow once we start watching the game. So it's
and if he is returning that opening kick, I would say that's probably a good indication that Coach Guy has confidence that he can go the full 60 minutes and do it at a pretty high level.
Totally agree. Now, overall, I mean, as I said before, who do you choose? I mean, not necessarily based on the players went up, but who do you think is going to win?
Well, I've been saying all week that I think Arizona is going to win this game.
By the way, Joe, we are going to get you in on this.
Oh, okay. We
want your pick.
We're putting Joe in on this, even though I already know which way Joe's going with this. but I think Arizona is a physical team, and I think it's a team that Philadelphia hasn't seen yet this year, and I think it's a team that Philadelphia is underestimating. I like the philosophy that Coach Guy uses. I think this Arizona team was kind of overlooked all year in a very good division. They had to play six games against Spokane, San Jose, and Utah, and then two more in the playoffs.
Yeah.
So this has not been an easy road to get here for Arizona to say the least. But I think that they're going to be able to find a way that winning these close games and losing that close game last year has let this team grow. And especially if Virgil Gray can play, I think the Rattlers are going to be able to pull this one out in the end.
Joe.
Oh, you really want to know my opinion?
Yes, we really want to know your opinion.
All right. Well, I'm going with the Philadelphia Soul for one reason and one reason only. The general manager of the Philadelphia Soul is Tom Goodhines. Tom Goodhines is a former arena fan writer. We consider him an alum, obviously. And then he went on to work for the league in Utah, and now he's the GM of Philadelphia. And everyone knows that the people at Arena Fan know more about this league than anyone else. And that gives them an edge because they just built the better team. So I'm going with Philadelphia.
So 1-4, 1-against.
All right, Tim, you're tie-breaking for Arena
Fan. No, I actually, out of looking at everything, and I wasn't here to see Media Day, but from what I've gathered, Arizona seems to be a team with a chip on their shoulder. They want something to prove. It's they were beat at home in such a way last year that I'm sure it left a sour taste in their mouths. And I'm kind of agreeing. I think Arizona played a lot harder schedule this year, especially the division that they're in. Philadelphia, I don't know. I don't think they've been as tested as much as Arizona has this year. So it's sure 15 wins is fantastic, but just something about from what I've seen and everything about Arizona, I'm actually going to go with the Arizona Rattlers on this one. I just have that feeling. It's that. Sure, Coach Dozell has not had a very good history when it comes to.
And neither has Coach Blank.
That's true. Yeah, when it comes to teams doing that well, especially we all know what happened to the 15-1 team for Coach Dozell. I just think Arizona. I'm going to go with Arizona on this one, but I'm hoping just for a high-scoring game, nonetheless, eh?
I don't think it'll be as high-scoring as the Arizona-Utah game was last week. You end up in a. You got to remember that Arena Bowl last year before it went back and forth and back and forth and back and forth at the end was a low-scoring game.
It was.
That probably should have ended with around somewhere between 100 and 110 points.
Yeah.
Between the two teams, I think that's what we're going to see in this one. I think we're going to see a lot of clock-eating drives. I think, especially if Virgil Gray is healthy, that we're going to see Arizona play those four guys in and really, play them short and really make Dan Rodabaugh beat them. And I don't know if he can. And that will slow down the game. I don't think Arizona is really in any particular hurry. I think they want to play a physical game. I think they want to let Maurice Purifoy go out there and knock around with Kent Richardson and knock around with Rayshon Kaiser and see what these guys are really made of. I think you're going to see a lot of pushing and shoving. I think you're going to see a lot of penalty flags. I think it's going to, when you look back at the box score, it's going to say it was a sloppy game. Remember, Arizona's turned the ball over 8 times already over the course of the playoffs. I've got to imagine, though we don't know this, I will hopefully try to find this out somewhere in the next 24 hours or so. I can't imagine there's ever been a team turn a ball over this many times in the postseason and still find a way to win. Yet Arizona keeps doing it, and they're doing it by playing better teams than what Philadelphia is.
That's true. Give an MVP if you were to give one.
I'll go Purifoy.
Joe?
I'll go Morris Purifoy.
No? Okay.
Tom Goodhines.
Yeah, actually, I was thinking Purifoy also. I think. It would have to be the Purifoy today, but I think if anything, probably would be Purifoy. But you know what? For all we know, somebody's going to come out of the woodwork and be somebody totally different, eh?
58-50, rats.
58-50. I'm not going to even go. I can't even think because I love a lot of scoring. So it's. Remember, guys, you are able to get in contact with us many different ways here at Arena Fan. You can do so via our Twitter and our Facebook accounts. It's both at Arena Fan.
And our blog.
And don't forget that over on the message boards. Emails at tim.kepper@arenafan.com and adam.markowitz@arenafan.com. We are hoping to have we're going to look at having a post-game. Quick post-game.
From the arena.
From the arena.
Hopefully sometime during the celebration or after the celebration.
Exactly.
Just as we did in 2010.
Watch our social media feeds and the message boards for any information and that we're going to have something like that or any breaking information to come, which we never know may happen. So, all right. So anything? Any last words, sir?
Man, I have nothing witty to say this week.
Yeah, that's okay.
USA beat the crap out of Canada in soccer.
Oh.
and then took gold medals, something that Canada only has one of in these Olympics.
bash the Canadian, isn't it?
You're damn straight.
Yeah, Joe.
Two of us are wearing AFL shirts right now. One of us is wearing a CFL shirt.
I got to represent, yo. Come on. Yeah, Adam rolls his eyes. So for everybody here at the AFL Tonight Studios, for Adam Markowitz, for Joe Kaufman,
and Joe Kaufman.
I'm Tim Capper. Watch the rebound off the nuts.